Welcome back to the Balance is Bullshit podcast, the real stories of blending motherhood and career, where we're sitting down with mamas and caregivers that are making waves in their career. And we get the unvarnished version of what it's like, their trade-offs, the epiphanies, the milestones. Whether you're here because it's a tough day, you're celebrating, or you want to get tools to craft your most fulfilled life, we've got you. And remember, you're welcome here as your whole self, not just your best self. Let's get to today's episode. Hey, I'm so happy you're here. Thanks for joining us. Today we have Keish Shannon on the podcast, and she is a former colleague turned friend and mentor. I am so excited for you to have a chance to listen to this. So Keish is a mom of two. She's a marketing executive, and she's got a decorated career in marketing. She's focused the last 20 or so years as a B2B SaaS marketing executive specifically. And we cover lots across the board. We start with talking a lot about how she grounds her kids in the history of her family to help them really appreciate the present. She talks about hitting a glass ceiling within her career as a marketing manager, not really being able to get herself unstuck from there. And she shares with us what helped propel her forward finally. And you might not have expected me to say this, but I'm really glad the doorbell rang during our conversation with her dry cleaning. It forced us to hit on an important topic, the perception of being superwoman. But in reality, you have to have help. You can't do everything at 100%, or you can't do 100% of it by yourself. I hope you enjoy this conversation as much as I did. Have a great day. So today, one of my absolute, and we had a little love fest before this, favorite leaders, is joining us today, and I'm so excited. So Keish Shannon is a mom first, but also an amazing, amazing tech exec in the marketing arena. And you've all heard her bio, but we've had the pleasure of working together for a few years. And Keish has given me so much guidance in my journey in coming into my own as a businesswoman and as a mom. And so I'm really, really grateful for her to be able to share some of that also with all of you. And Keish, you bring humor. I think that's one of the things I love the most about you is you bring humor, humility, and inspiration to so many, not only in our one-on-ones, but I can recall countless all hands meetings where people were like literally falling off their chairs laughing because of the energy you brought. And you've also been a really big source of support managing through the emotions of a six-year-old. And I'm just so grateful for that. So thank you so much for being here. To say I've learned from you a lot from you would be an understatement. So welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, Jess. And right back at you. It's mutual.
I am excited for you to share some of that today. So before we even jump in, because I do want to talk a little bit about the evolution of your career. I mean, you've had some amazing parts of your career that have all strung together into your legacy so far and continuing on. But I want to get to, I know you, I have the pleasure of knowing quite a bit about you, but not everyone on this, you know, listening will. So who's Keish? Tell us a little bit about you, what you stand for, what you believe in. I'd love to just start there with some of the basics.
You know what? That question's an easy one, and it's a hard one at the same time because there's a lot of complexities to each of us. And I start to think, like, you're like, who am I? What do I stand for? And you know what? I'm definitely a mom. Everything I do for the betterment of my two kids. I have a 13-year-old boy and I have an 11-year-old daughter. And where I even live from a geographical standpoint, it was because I wanted to offer them, you know, a wholesome environment, good education, streets where they can play on. I took the brunt of all the commuting back and forth all over the Bay Area. And trust me, oh, it was a commute. I do all of that because I love them dearly. And I always think to myself, like, my kids didn't ask to be here. I brought them here. And so I want to make sure that I am setting them up to be these good little humans who are going to grow up and be contributors to our culture, to our world, to the future. And that's on me to make sure that I'm giving them every opportunity. And so that's probably, I stand for my family. I try to be a good wife. I have my moments, I'm sure.
as do we all.
Right. And then I would say, you know, yes, work definitely comes into play. And I really like to be good at what I do. And since we spend so much time with each other, I tend to mama bear my team. I'm protective of them in many ways, in the same ways I'm protective of my own kids. And I love to share what I know. So I think if I had to maybe just answer, I'm like, just sharing is caring. And I know that sounds so elementary to say, but it is the very root of who I am. And my grandparents are from the South. So I've got this Southern hospitality where I'm constantly, if you come to my house, I'm going to feed you and feed you and feed you, because that is just how I roll. And yeah, I come from a group of women who worked hard their whole lives. And I feel very blessed and proud to be, you know, part of that legacy. So yeah, they work ethic. They taught me everything. Dads too. But yeah, I come from a line of strong women for sure.
Strong women. Who were some of the biggest influences on you from the strong woman perspective growing up? And even today?
I'd have to say I always lean in on my time with my mom's mother. So my maternal side. I got to know my grandmother really well. And there was a lot of things that her and I had in common. Like, we love both wearing hats. We both love dressing up. We both love our desserts. And I remember spending time with her in the kitchen trying to learn her recipes, because she never wrote anything down. Everything was always in her head. And I remember just, you know, my grandmother, she had 15 kids and growing. And yes, 15 kids. And they all grew up in Arkansas, and you know, their livelihood was sharecropping. So there was no, you know, education was, you know, very low on the totem pole for growing up during that time, and not a lot of resources. And so here, there's this woman who's got 15 kids, and she had to serve breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And she cooked and baked everything from scratch. And then she also worked in the field, and she did things for ironing for other. Yeah, this woman worked beyond, you know, anything that I could ever imagine. And so I always think to myself, if my grandmother can do all this and have all of her children thrive. And my mom, you know, she was she came to San Francisco not really knowing anybody from Arkansas, and she became a nurse. And then she turned around and had a second career as an early Head Start teacher. If my mom can do all of these things, then I don't know. I look at my challenges as, you know, they always say first world problems. I look at my challenges as being easy in comparison, but I don't take light of all the challenges that I've had to overcome. I'm just empowered by what I know that they've done, what I've seen them do, and what I know they overcame or overcome. So I feel blessed. And so those are the two that are just always in my corner at my foundation. And my father has a really good, strong work ethic as well. He also grew up in the South. And I remember him telling me that his career choices graduating high school was to be a painter. He could have picked sugarcane, or he could have gone into the military. Imagine having those of being your only three options graduating high school. And so he opted to go into the Navy, and he went and saw the world. And then when he came back, guess what his options were still? He could paint houses, or he could pick sugarcane. And he decided that was not enough for him, and nor was it going to be enough of the legacy he wanted. So he too booked it to San Francisco. And luckily for me, they met, and came me eventually. and then a sibling. But I always thought just that everybody else had, 15, you know, 15 aunts and uncles. And that was just my mom's side. My dad's side, I had six more. And then of course they married. And then of course I just thought everyone's family was huge as mine. I learned later that was not the case, but yes, I have been surrounded by strong dreamers and work ethics. And I lean into that when I'm always, trying to find my own inspiration and trying to remember why I'm doing what I'm doing. I look at my kids, I look at my family, and I look at my life, and I remind myself to be proud.
You should be. That's a heck of a set of folks to learn from. And your kids are lucky that you get to pass on that, all of that history too, to them.
I'm definitely trying. It's harder with this generation because they're so far removed from anything like that, that they don't have a concept of hardness. And I don't want to generalize, because there's definitely kids out there who definitely understand what hardship looks like. But I will say, just speaking of my kids, they don't know what hardship looks like. And so they're so far removed from it. So I have to make sure I find other ways to show them and teach them so that they have an appreciation for what they have. I do, because one of the things that I always tell all walks of people, but I make sure to say it to young people more so than anyone else, because I don't feel like it's said to a lot of young people, not to, you know, age myself here, but it's knowing your worth. And a part of knowing your worth is also understanding where you come from. Now, your immediate coming from, like your immediate family, but also knowing your legacy. And I do a lot of looking into the genealogy of my family and trying to understand where people are coming from. And so I'm always learning something new about my ancestries. But I know, just being African American, Jess, that not all of my ancestors had, not all their dreams were realized. But I do feel like I'm one of those dreams that is realized. I mean, I can't even imagine, like, if my grandmother walked to my house right now, she didn't live long enough to see how, you know, what I've become. But if she walked to my house right now, she would be just gobsmacked. She couldn't fathom that this house would be my house, this car would be my car, that this job would be my job. And I remember this story where, this is my other grandmother's, this is my father's mother. When my dad bought his, this would be their second home, and it was a lot larger home, a lot larger acreage of land. She came to the house, and so they were downstairs, and I will never forget this story, because she kept telling my mom to quiet down. And my mom was like, "Why do I need to quiet down?" Because my grandmother had it in her mind that somebody else lived upstairs, and that we must have lived downstairs. So she couldn't have it in her mind that this whole house belonged to her son, or that it was our home. She just couldn't understand that. And so when I think about that story and I think, gosh, if either of my grandmothers came here and looked at where I am, and they would be proud, I know, but they would just be, I think, overwhelmed. I know I would be. Part of me is like, gosh, I hope as a spirit in the future, I get to see where my ancestors go. Amazing. Imagine how amazing that would be.
And so I bet they're having all of those feelings, at least in my beliefs, for sure. How are you imparting that on your kids that don't have that same connection to the past? Because I want so deeply for my kids to have an appreciation of where they've come from, and appreciate the things that they have. And I know they do, but it's a different experience than maybe we had before. So how have you had those conversations, or how do you instill that into your kids?
So I'm not going to pretend that I've got this one figured out, but what I like to think is, when I go back in time and I think about how my parents shared with me and my sister, we heard them. We took it in, but we didn't exactly know what to do with it. So what I think is happening with my two kids is, as I'm sharing stories with them, stories that are I directly experience, or I directly know, or my passing down stories that from my mother, my grandmother, I know they hear me. And every once in a while, I'll bring something up where they'll say, like, "Oh yeah, you told us, grandma, you know, my grandmother, you know, she had to do that." And I infuse some of this with, you know, like, I make this one recipe that my grandmother makes it. Oddly enough, none of her 15 kids know how to make. And because I spent all this time in the kitchen with her, I have figured out how to do it. And so when I make it and they love it and they enjoy it, I talk about her and I talk about that time. So it's not even just that it's about Mary, my grandmother, it's also about the time in which she would have been making these they're called tea cakes, making these tea cakes. And then I also, in part of our vacations, I it's not always just fun. It's sometimes it's got to be, you know, learning. So we go in, you know, we go and do things that are, it could be natural history, it could be cultural. And I always try to, it's not just my history of being African American or my husband's, you know, history. He's Irish, Italian, and Scottish. And it's not just that, but it's also just understanding other cultures and understanding what made it difficult for them. How did they get here? We watch period pieces together. And it's just an infusing a lot of this in their vacation. So I've got a vacation coming up and we're going to go to New Orleans. It's probably not this year. It'll be next year. And, you know, I want them to see one where my father's side of the family came from. I want them to see what slave quarters look like. I want them to understand what plantations look like, because for them, they'll read about this in a book somewhere, but imagine being able to draw upon the visualization of it. And we do it wherever we go, even Hawaii. We went and saw and listened to some of the cultural stories there. It's like, it's not necessarily their story, but it is theirs is ours. So we're all, you know, we're all one here in many ways. And so I just want to make sure that they're hearing multiple views, not just mine. So yeah. I guess that's how.
I mean, I love hearing how you approach it and how just parents approach this topic in general. And I think the thing I'm like, one of the themes I'm hearing in the way that you're raising your kids is not only keeping it as a consistent part of your storytelling and interaction, but it's almost like, it almost just feels like a part of your value system as a family.
It really is. And I'm actually very lucky that my husband shares in a similar mindset. I don't know that we would have worked if he did. This is the only way in which I can sort of part down that information, that knowledge, because in many ways, I hope they never experience some of the things that I know that I've experienced, as well as my, grandparents and grandparents. I hope they never experience segregation. I hope they never have to ever sharecrop. But I will say, this is something my mom did to me and my sister and her sisters did. We did it as a family. It's like cousin stuff. My parents wanted us to understand what it was like to sharecrop, Jess. So they took us out into the field and we spent the whole day picking strawberries, string beans, greens. We picked all our vegetables. And then I was just like, it was hot and you're crouched down and you're just spending the whole day in this position. It is no fun. So you know what? It does drive you, go get an education. So if that is not what you want to go do, you will find ways to, you know, persevere around it. Or maybe you become someone who develops a technology that helps makes this easier. I don't know, but it does light a fire under you when you realize that that is how they got their food. That is how they also made.
And how some people still do make a living.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. So when are your kids doing that full day of work?
Well, I don't know that we'll do a whole day of it, but we'll do half day. So I'm going to start them off even this year. We've done things like strawberry picking and cherry picking, but they're young and they were like, oh, yeah, so much fun. Now right. There's stuff. Now there's things to lose. Like you are going to disrupt your Saturday of whatever plans you thought you were going to have that day. And guess what? We're going to go and work in the field and you're going to understand what that's really like. Because I think it's one, it's important to know where your food comes from and know quality versus, you know, quantity. And then also respecting, you know, eat, you know, don't be wasteful. Cause that's something that would have never happened growing up in my house or in my mom's house. Or my dad's house, you when something was put on your plate, you ate the whole thing or you saved it for later, but it's yours to eat. And see, my kids, they're picky eaters and they're wasteful eaters. And I'm like, that's got to shift. So we'll be making some changes. And then part of that,
I want to connect with you on that trip. Let's
connect on Facebook at least so you can see the grumpy face.
Yes. And I think it'd be so cool for them to be able to share then that experience with their own community of friends and carry that, you know, carry that, whatever their takeaway is, forward.
Yeah.
It makes me think, this is maybe a jump pivot, but it does, like, what I think about when I think about you sharing these stories and creating these values, it makes me think a lot about, from a work perspective, this sense of empathy for, like, stepping in someone else's shoes and how important that is, like, across life, but also in your career. So I want to talk a little bit about how motherhood has intertwined in your work life. But before we go there, maybe you can just walk us through a little bit of your career journey. You've been marketing through and through.
Yes.
And that has been a, you know, steady stream throughout your career. But the, you know, you started at, you were at Bank of the West, you were at Comcast, and then really leaned into technology over the last 20 or so years. What drew you, I mean, again, marketing through and through, what drew you in, and then what's kept you there?
You know, what's funny is, so when I went to school, I started off at a junior college. And I thought, okay, I'm going to get my general education out of the way. I wasn't 100% sure on what I wanted to do. So I just thought I was going to study business. And then I ended up taking a psychology course and fell in love with psychology. And then over time realized that I wanted to do something more with human development and the workforce. That was always an interest of mine. My dad was always like, what is this going to, are you going to live on my couch? That was, that was his question. Like, how do you turn this into something? And, you know, my dad, he worked for Pacific Gas and Electric. So he knows, you know, companies like that, where you work there, you stay there for 30 plus years, you get a pension, you retire. And that's, you know, it's a very linear line. And so I disrupted that by a lot for not only him, but for other people in my family, that I introduced a career option and choice that was just couldn't be grappled with. And so I eventually ended up in a marketing job, Jess. I was thinking I was going to do HR, but I couldn't land anything in HR. So I ended up in marketing. And then decided that I was good at it. I enjoyed it. I really liked the getting in the mindset of who I was marketing to and how to make, you know, people do what you need them to do, which is ultimately buy. And then how do you make them happy so they stay? And I don't know. I just was over the years drawn. And so I started off on the B2C side, as you mentioned, Bank of the West and Comcast. I went back to school, got a second degree, which I don't know that I shared this, but I outside of myself at that time, only one other person in my family had a degree. My dad had an associate's arts degree. And then I had an aunt actually who had a bachelor's degree. So higher education or completion of higher education wasn't something that happened a lot in my family. So my graduating not only with a bachelor's degree and graduating with a master's degree was, I'm the only one at that time who had done it. I now have cousins and second cousins who've done this, which is amazing. But at that time I was the only one. And so I went back, got the degree, second degree in marketing, and I never looked back. And I transferred over to tech just because I got bitten by the digital bug, where I wanted to do more things with websites. And I loved the idea of doing email marketing and just all the fun that comes with building something. And I loved my time at Comcast, now Xfinity, but they were the direct mail kings and queens. And I was over the direct mail. I was over outdoor marketing. I had done that, could do it with my eyes closed. I really wanted to explore the digital realm. And so I never looked back. I went into it and never looked back. Loved it. Still to this day, still love it.
Still to this day. And I have seen you in action. And not only do you love it and bring that passion, but you're incredibly talented.
Thank you. In that
space, I've learned so much from working alongside you. You did the work and you got the promotion and you changed the jobs and you kept moving up. But if you've been in leadership roles for as long as you've got to have some bumps, bruises, and then resilience along the way. So can you talk a little bit about some of the realities of, like, the struggles to make someone that may be going through that right now feel a little bit less alone?
Oh, for sure. You're absolutely right. You look at someone's LinkedIn profile and it feels like it was just all roses and celebrations as they progress. My story definitely had some huge pauses in them, partly because I just hit glass ceilings. I struggled with, I always knew where I wanted to go, even if I didn't necessarily have the right words to sort of embody it. I knew that my North Star in my career was ultimately, I figured out early on, I wanted to be the person who owned all of marketing. And so when I got into tech and I was a marketing manager, I was just, I just basically was absorbing everything from every department. So I came in and I was doing demand gen, and I was literally one of the first hires in this group, working on marketing operations, working on direct marketing, a little bit of website. And I just, every time I had an idea, luckily for me, I had a really good boss who liked the techie side. He was, he loved the operation side, and so he was very supportive there. But all my crazy ideas that I had, he, it's not that he couldn't see it, but he was like, how are you going to turn this into fruition? How does this turn into something that there's an ROI? So I like the challenge that he always provided, which kept me a bit grounded. And I do have that sort of as my foundation for everything I do. Like, I love the pie in the sky ideas, but they got to turn into something. But I hit, I he eventually moved on to something else, and I hit glass ceilings. I couldn't get out of being just a marketing manager. I was training other people to become great at what they do. I was assisting, supporting. All the workload would come to me. I supported at this time all of mid-market and enterprise all by myself, and I couldn't get promoted. I could not get promoted. I was seeing people with less experience and less passion, less ability, becoming senior managers, but I couldn't get there. And it wasn't until I got this one manager right before that company was acquired. And she said to me, she said, you know why you probably struggled at getting promoted? I said, like, please tell me, because I've hit this wall many, many times, and I'm just sliding down off of it. And she says, you're too amazing at what you do. And I thought, well, okay, how does that work? Do you just suck more? it was the bizarre, it was so true. But at the same time, like, how do you make that actionable? How do I make, do I do less? Should I, how do I get less at what I do so that I can get promoted? And what she was trying to tell me, and I eventually figured out, is if you're so good at what you do, people will keep you in that spot. Now, you're sometimes you'll get lucky and you'll get someone like a great manager who will recognize your talent and push you and then help you succeed through your career. But there are more bad managers out there than there are good ones. And I also was getting penalized for the fact that I had a little one. So I had my son at this point in time, and he's home. And when you have a baby slash toddler, they get every sick, cold, disease you can think of from the preschool daycare. You think to yourself, why am I bringing you here? You spend more time at home than you do at the preschool. And so, but it will pay off. Their immunity gets strong, and it will work for you. But it does, those early years are hard. So I had him, and then guess what? I'm now pregnant with my second child. So now I've got this view of being really good at what I do. I've got a toddler where, and then I'm pregnant. So I was getting written off as like, well, you're just going to go make babies, and I don't want to invest in more in what you do because what you do is perfect, but I'm going to advance all these other people around you who are not in my situation. Not to say they weren't moms, but maybe their kids were older, or they had more of a support system than I did. But they looked less of a threat and more reliable in that picture that that manager systems were painting. So
Oh.
yeah, it took me a long time to sort of understand how to take that feedback, that share, and make it actionable for me. And it honestly took probably having this conversation with other moms who I know went through it, and networking with them and saying, this is what I want to do. I want to grow my family, but I also want to grow in my career. And I don't think I should have to give up one for the other. And through time, I eventually found people who were like, doorbell.
Someone is at the front door.
Hey, somebody.
How to unplug that. There's my real life right there.
I was recording earlier today, and we had a little one napping on the monitor next to us, so It's well, life. I don't know. The doorbell rings sometimes.
It does ring. Sometimes babies cry and dogs bark. So I built these relationships not to be selfish about it. Just give me one second.
Yeah.
He'll figure out what to do. I believe. He'll figure out what to do. He'll stop ringing the doorbell and he'll put whatever he's got in his hand.
Do you need to get it?
No.
Okay.
So we have a dry cleaning service that we have Ring, and
that's one of those hacks though, because you can't get to where you have been, I don't believe. And again, gut check me on this, but without asking for help or making trade-offs along the way. And a lot of times people don't see that. I think like as I was coming up in my career and thinking about like hitting these ceilings or these walls, as you're talking about, and thinking how I think about you, I didn't see that people at the level I wanted to get to, they didn't do their own dry, like they didn't bring their dry cleaning. They didn't, they weren't the school parent. They couldn't make dinner every single night, but tried to do it some nights. Like, and I think that's, if you want to have a lot of components in your life that you're investing in, you just can't, it's like, you've got to get help. And that's part of making it possible.
Well, and I think that that's the thing that we don't always get to see, because people show up and you're in the office, or they show up and you're on Zoom and you just see this, you know, 14-inch screen of them and everything looks perfect. What you don't see is what's to the left, to the right, or truly behind the door. And when I was saying earlier, where I found women who were in a similar situation or had already accomplished further along than I try to learn from them. I spent time with them and I got to know, like, okay, so you're divorced and your ex-husband's driving you nuts, and your daughter's in all these activities. How do you get her to all these activities? And so it was really learning the other side of trying to make it all come together and know that no one person is doing anything 100%. And I know that I can sometimes appear to people as though I'm some sort of superwoman, but I have a dry cleaning service. I take money out of my account and I have a maid service because I don't want to spend any time cleaning my house if I don't have to. But I do all of this so that I can do other things, which is be there for my daughter or be there for my son. And I would gladly do it again. I will find a way to just off, you know, it's kind of like that when you get emails and you have to do decide, delete, defer, or whatever. It's kind of like that in life. It's like, if you like doing the laundry, do the laundry. But if you can outsource doing the laundry, outsource to the laundry.
One of the things I had wanted to ask you about, which is kind of a natural segue, is that partnership, because you and your husband both have demanding jobs, and you've talked a little bit about you know, some of the things that you do, like getting, you know, helping with the getting help with the house or the dry cleaning. But how, when you both are sitting down and thinking about, because I know you value family and being present for your kids. I know you're a Girl Scout troop leader. Like there are other commitments that you believe are priorities. How do you figure out those priorities with your husband? And, you know, what are the trade-offs between your career and his career, your commitment versus his? Like, how does that all work for you?
You know what? I am very thankful that Mike understood what he was getting himself into when we got married some years ago on that August morning. But Jess, I will say what he and I do well is that I know where I can count on him and I know where he can shine. And an example of that is, right now my son is in fencing. He is carting Matthew, about 25 miles away from where we live so that he can go do fencing. And his schedule allows for that kind of flexibility where mine does not. However, I also know that if I go out of town, I'm going to get a call from one of my kids who's talking about how they hate doing homework with Mike. Because doing homework with dad is nowhere near fun. And you would have thought a war broke out on my street. So there are areas where Mike is amazing, and I lean into that heavily, and I don't feel bad, but I make sure to say thank you, and I make sure to know that I make sure to make sure that he knows he's appreciated, just like there are things that I do well. We have Goose. Where we use a calendar, a family calendar, and when he has to travel, before he can commit to that travel, we have to talk about it. But there have been goofs. I remember one day, I said, "Well, do you want to go and eat here at some restaurant?" And he goes, "Oh, no, they always give a lot of food and I don't want leftovers." And I was like, "Why don't you want leftovers?" He goes, "Oh, because I won't be here to eat it." I go, "Where are you going?" He forgot to tell me that he was traveling and that he was going to be out of town. You can imagine that I wasn't smiling, and that I was very unhappy in that moment. And I muttered a lot of things under my breath. But we have our moments where there's an epic fail that happens in there, and you know, we get past it. And there were times when his schedule, he traveled a lot early on in my career, especially when I moved into tech, where I felt like a single mom. And I was trying to figure out how to get my kids to preschool, how to get to my actual in-person office location, and then get back with all the traffic and just be present at both spots. It's hard. It's extremely hard. And you'll lose your mind trying to be perfect Patty and trying to accomplish that. So when you wake up that morning, just embrace what's going to happen. If your kid wakes up with a fever that morning, embrace it. So and so's got a fever. That's just what's going to happen. I am not going to beat myself up over it. Yes, I wish it wasn't happening, but what will that? You can't wish it away. So just accept. And if everything goes well and the garage door doesn't break as soon as your husband leaves out of town, great. Yeah, that's amazing too. But I have definitely, when I leave out of town, it's the homework wars. When he leaves out of town, everything goes wrong in the house. And
Yep.
so, and every, but you just roll with it. You cannot beat yourself up on any level, and you just have to lean into each other's superpowers. And there are things that, like math homework, that's Mike. English homework, that's me. And we just recognize where we can really help each other.
Your strengths. Yeah, that's so. Oh, that's so important. And I could learn a little bit from all that. I remember, Keish, I remember we I can't remember where we were from. I think it was Toronto where we were going for that one of the executive offsites, and we were flying, and I think I can't remember if you needed to get home, but Mike was
I
going to
did.
be in the air as you were getting home, and there were a handful of hours where you were both going to be in the air at the same time, and you're like, thank goodness my kids are older now, because this would have been so much more stress. It's stressful, but it would have been so much more stressful.
Yes,
But you've made a wife.
we do, and I am thankful that it gets easier because your kids become easier to talk to. Before, you know, mom would just disappear. Dad would just disappear. They didn't have a concept of what work travel or what we were doing. And I remember the first time that I was able to take them to an office that I worked at and they could comprehend. And I remember Zia sitting in my chair and she's twirling around. Matthew's, we had these little phone booths where you could, you know, take your meeting in a phone booth. He just thought that was the best thing on the planet. And so they were like, "Oh, so you get to work here. So this is where you go." And I was like, "Yeah." I said, "And sometimes that location's here and sometimes that location." I was traveling to Toronto a lot. I go, "Sometimes it's in Toronto, but it looks just like this." And so that helped them to also understand where I was going. Before then, when they're like really small, under 5, it's hard. You try and show them things, and if you can take them to a physical building, that helps them understand where mom and dad are going, or where their parents are going. But at the end of the day, it's time. Time is what's going to help you navigate through this. And your children are going to be fine because they're super resilient. And I always say this to brand new moms when I see them bring their babies home, or I said, as long as your baby is fed, clean, happy, you are success. That is it. You are success. That baby knows what love is all about. Do not beat yourself up. Do not make yourself feel bad because your baby was colicky one night, or having a reaction to some medicine. You are showing that baby everything it needs. Do not beat yourself up because there's enough out there that makes mom guilt real. And there's no need to add to it by yourself. You know what I mean? Don't make it worse for yourself.
Totally. Yep. I can relate to that for sure. I am. So your kids are, remind me, you said 11 and 13 now?
11 and 13. Yeah.
So you're a little bit ahead in terms of where I am with my kids. And I am curious, and we have people that are anywhere from family planning and don't have kids yet, or might not even sure that they want kids, totally fine. Right. Or they've, you know, their kids are, they're empty nesters now, and the kids are off and they're done with the, you know, really, really active parenting. I'm curious, at this age, at 11 and 13, like you said, below five, hard. I'm starting to see with my older at six, Kennedy's starting to engage with what work means and how important it is to have an income so that we can have a house and send her to, you know, get new clothes when she grows out of them, go out to dinner every now and then, you know, all those things. How do your kids at this age see you and see work for you? Like, what is that experience like at this age with them?
So they have a better comprehension of the type of work that me and my husband do. Whereas before, you know, I say, Matthew, I do marketing, and he's just blinking like, I don't know what that is. And so he has a better understanding of, you know, what it is. And I point out things to him, like, that's considered marketing. And we have really good conversations so that he understands what I'm doing. The one thing that I will say that I learned, this happened probably he's seventh grade. This happened probably around fourth and fifth grade. He set a high bar of expectation of what he thought I was expecting of him. And where this came into play is that when he didn't do well in something, he would beat himself up like, oh, my mom's not going to like this. I didn't do well. And, you know, whatever the proverbial A is in the fifth grade, because they don't do letter grade. He's like, I didn't do well. And I didn't understand why he was putting this pressure on himself. And it's because from his perception, I looked perfect. He was like, you're a good mom, mom. You're the best mom. I love you, mom. So I'm in his mind, I'm a good mom. And then in his mind, he sees me doing my job, and he thinks, okay, well, it looks like she's doing amazing there too. And, you know, our house is, you know, it's good house. So he's thinking like, oh, everything's clean. I have what I need. So mom's perfect. And therefore he felt that if he wasn't perfect, that I'd be disappointed. Oh. That's a caveat that kids do have with working parents, is they see this high caliber of performance that's happening, and they feel like they themselves have to live up to that at that age. And they don't understand that what goes into it, it's an orchestra of different instruments playing at different times. They don't understand that. So we had to talk through that. And I've always maintained with my kids that I don't need you to show me an A. I don't need that letter grade. What I need to know is, do you know what you're learning? Do you understand it? Raise your hand when you need help. Are you really giving it your best? If you're giving your best, I can see that, and it'll come through, and however it comes through. But once we talked through that, and I explained to him that I don't do all of marketing by myself, I have a team. And my team also has different needs. And sometimes I'm learning from them and vice versa. And so it's important to make sure your kids don't just think that you're this perfect being, and that they actually see the flaws, because then they end up putting this unnecessary pressure on themselves. And some kids can handle it, some kids cannot. So you're better off just erring on the side of like, let's just talk through it, so you don't think that I'm perfect Patty and that you have to be like me in the fifth grade.
Yeah. I'm nodding a lot listening to you say that. We're working through right now the fact that both accidents and mistakes and, you know, things that feel not so good are actually one of the most powerful ways to learn. And and right now it's like, rips my heart out when I see my oldest make a mistake. There's so much shame in that, and that's like the last thing that I want. And so yeah, I mean, it's what I've been doing, you know, more and more is you know, I'm going through an interview process now. I told her I got a rejection last week. They didn't want me. They picked someone else. And I know my flaw. Like, I'm very self-reflective. Like, I know my flaws and where I fall short and probably too hard of myself, but I know they see that. And I like, don't want that to be their world when they grow up.
And I think it's all ages. I think about even, you know, older kids whose parents never let them see them make a mistake. And so they always feel like they can't talk to their parents about things because then they feel like, well, you never made a mistake, even though logically they know that can't be so, but it's still, they don't have that. They don't have that experience with their parents. And they don't have that relationship. And so it's important. You know, we don't want to worry our kids, but at the same time, we can't hide that we do worry about things. We can hide selectively what we worry about so that they're not overexposed to things, especially at a young age. But I remember when my dad lost his job and I was in high school at this point in time, and he came home and he says, I've got 30 days to go find another job within the company. And I was like, well, what happens if you don't find that? And he goes, I'm permanently have lost my job. And then I thought to myself, what can I do? And I actually ended up helping my dad with his resume in high school because I could type it all up for him and make it look good. And I was early marketing and didn't know it. And so I was writing out, you know, things that he accomplished and making it sound a little better than what he could have done. And he I remember that. And I am actually very thankful that that was something he brought me in on, because then I could see, you know, that he had moments of fear, that he worried about things, that he wasn't perfect. He didn't have all the answers. And it then, you know, it instills this, you know, that there will be times when I will have to encounter that. And if I ever need to talk to my dad about that, I know that I can, because he can relate. And sometimes we forget to build that relationship with our kids. And so, yeah.
Oh, Keish, I could keep talking to you forever. And I know we will. We'll be friends forever.
Yes. Yes. You can't get rid of me.
I know. And I love that. And I do. All right. Number one, what is one piece of advice you have for other moms who also value and want to still build their career?
Ooh, that's a good one. Okay. So I'm supposed to fire it out and keep it short. You know what? I'm going to go back with what I'm saying. Know your worth. Know that you can be anything you really want to be, as long as you're willing to put in the work for it. You may have to sacrifice on things, but it doesn't mean that you have to give up. You might have to sacrifice on something today just to get something even better down the road. You just stay the course, keep at it, and talk through it with more than just yourself. Talk through it with other people.
Oh, such a good one. Thank you. Two. Okay. What is your favorite part of being an executive in tech?
You know what? It's funny. My 15 aunts or 20 aunts and uncles with both sides of the family, they all thought I would be a teacher, Jess. And I think it's because I like to share. And so I find that whole sharing is caring. That's just who I am. So I love mentoring. I love sharing my experiences with anyone who wants to listen. So I think that's my favorite part, is I get people on my team and I like to challenge them with helping them figure it out without telling them. I don't want to tell them what to do. I want to see them think through the puzzle pieces and get to the other side, because it'll make them a stronger marketer. I got to retire at some point.
You got to share all that wealth of knowledge so you can eventually be left alone and enjoy the rest of your life. No, I'm just kidding. I can't see you ever abandoning this element of mentorship. I mean, you were such an influential voice within our last company about, creating the mentorship program and really leaning into that. So I can't ever see that going away for you, but
probably not.
Yeah. Your favorite stage of parenting so far?
I'm going to say I'm really enjoying probably right about now. So I'm going to say when my daughter, who's the youngest, turned and got into the fourth grade, like the conversations got to be more fun. There's a lot more understanding of, you know, when I say something, that they have more vocabulary, they have more insight. I miss the little babies. I miss holding them too. And the baby smell, but I really am enjoying the now. So I would say that point in time from fourth grade to about now, Teenagers, oh gosh, pray for me. That's where I'm embarking now. So just pray for me.
I don't know that I want to know how that goes because I don't know how I'll handle the anticipation. No, it'll be great. It'll be great. You've raised incredible kids. Do you always have a top priority, like something that's non-negotiable? And if so, what is it?
So for my kids, and I phrase it just exactly like this. So if you were listening, if they were listening right now, I say to live in my house, you have to do music, sport, and you will have to do a foreign language. So the foreign language part, I haven't layered in just yet. And I figured I'll time that one with a bit of high school. I wanted to time it before, but couldn't. I want there to be an appreciation of music. I think sport, whether it be individual or team sport, it builds this this discipline. And then I like the camaraderie of it all. And so I mean, when I told them that in elementary school that they had to learn an instrument, oh, the faces. Oh my gosh, Jen. But now I've got a trumpet player who is like in love with music and wants to continue on with it. They only had to do 2 years. And so this will be his third year. And then my daughter, she took saxophone and she's finishing up her second year. And I said, she goes, I'm going to try out for jazz band next year. And I'm like, I knew that it's the exposure sometimes, just pushing them towards the exposure. And then for the sports, it's basketball and fencing for Matthew and it's volleyball for Zia. So I just want you to know what it's like to work hard at something and work in a team and have that discipline.
That's a goodie. I might have to steal some of that, copy and paste some of that for my kiddos. Superpower. What, you've been incredibly successful in your career. What has been your superpower?
You know, I have two that I lean into. The first one is just trying to remain organized. I know it's easier said than done, and I've got a junk drawer. I've got like two of them, but when I mean my organization, it's just like the family calendar, making sure that I map it out, like who's supposed to be where, who's responsible for getting that person there, when we're traveling, when we're not traveling, talking about vacations together, that kind of organization. Those are all important to keep your household and your sanity going in the right direction. And then the other one is wellness, taking care of yourself. It's really the airplane, you know, put your mask on before you put anyone else's on, because you cannot pour for an empty cup, pour from an empty cup. And there's nothing worse than getting sick, because now you've created this environment for yourself that is going to be even harder to get out of. And now there's an even layer of stress that is on you and your family, because you've allowed yourself to wear yourself down so much that now you're sick. And that's, you know, no one wants that for themselves or anyone else. So wellness in any way, shape or form that really serves you, just be well, figure out what that means and how that.
It's almost like the way you say that, it's almost like a reframing in my head of what your wellness, your personal wellness is a priority, is a requirement, a responsibility of being a great leader to your family and to your.
Because you have to put yourself first at some point, and how you do it can change. It doesn't have to mean that you exercise every day if that's not your jam. It could be that you sit down and you read a book. It could be that you watch a show that you enjoy. It could be that you cook something you want to eat. Whatever it may be that is nourishing of your soul, that's what that wellness is. You know, everyone has their own definition, and yours does not have to be a carbon copy of anybody else's. So don't guilt yourself because you don't want to jump on the Peloton all week long for 30 minutes. If you want to go for a walk or you want to Netflix it out, by all means, whatever nourishes your soul, just make sure you make time to do that.
Yep. Learning and constantly recommitting to that. Okay. I added one more and then I'll let you go, because I couldn't have you say that you spent all of this time learning in the kitchen with your grandma and not know what was your favorite recipe thing to cook with her. You mentioned the tea cakes, but I don't know if that was your favorite.
That is by far my favorite. The tea cakes
and it's
are
called tea cakes.
They're called tea cakes, and there are these cookies that that are very popular in the South. And they are very simple, very easy to make. And the reason why is because, you know, during that time you don't have a lot of money. So you make use of the materials and resources you have, and they're the best. And I, out of all of her 15 kids and all her nieces and nephews, sorry, you know, grandchildren, nieces, nephews, et cetera, that no one else can make them. And I have written out the recipe. I've shared it, but for some reason, something goes awry in the kitchen. And so my aunt Eunice, she says to me, she goes, "That's because grandma's blessed you with it." Her mother, you know, my grandmother, she goes, "She's blessed you with it because you actually spent time with her in the kitchen." And I try and honor even the smallest thing she did, which instead of using a cookie cutter, she would use, because she would use evaporated milk in the recipe, and you would use the evaporated milk can. Yep. I still do that because that's what she would have had available. So that, I feel like all those little touches make the difference.
Oh, yeah, I love that.
That's my other one.
Oh, have you thought about creating a cookbook with all of her recipes?
No, actually, I've never thought about doing that. That might actually be between my grandmother and my grandfather. My dad's dad, he was a cook, and he had a navy bean recipe soup that would, it was to die for. And my grandmother had jelly cake, tea cakes, plum jelly cake. Oh, my, upside down. Oh my gosh, the woman could bake. My grandfather could cook between the two of them. I think I'd probably have a pretty masterful cookbook, but I don't know, maybe.
Maybe. I'll line up for that one. But in the meantime, I might have to ask you. I'm just so curious how to make the tea cakes. Maybe I'll have to ask
you. I'll send you. I'll share that with you. Yeah.
Okay.
The sharing is caring. I will share it with you. Yeah.
Well, we have gone way over, so I have to let you go, even though I don't want to. But I'm just so grateful for you, Keish. Thank you.
Thank you for having me, Jess. As always, I love chatting with you.
Same. Always. Same. And that's a wrap on this one. Thank you so much for being here and spending your time with us. I know how busy you are and that it was a choice to click on the Balance is Bullshit podcast and spend some time with us. So I really, really appreciate that. If you enjoyed the conversation today and got value out of it, there's so much you can do to not only support us, but potentially add value to someone else. Shout from the rooftops what you loved. Give us a rating or a review. Like us, follow us, subscribe wherever you're listening to podcasts. And don't forget to share this episode with someone that you think would love it too. We'll see you again soon.